And we're holding on Samach Hey Amud Beis, the first line of the wide lines. We said in the Mishnah of Yechon ben Breika Omer that the Chachamim had said in the Tanakhama and the Mishnah had said that only men are chayiv and pruvu, and Rabbi Yechon ben Breika says women are also. Which, by the way, I mean, the Ran points out an idea, even if we say, like the Chachamim, that women are not chayiv, obviously they're a necessary prerequisite. Without them, he wouldn't be able to fulfill the mitzvah. And therefore, she definitely has a mitzvah involved. There's a discussion among the Achronim whether that means that she has, in general, a mitzvah, whether it means that she shares specifically in the mitzvah of Pru, that she has a certain chiyuv to that extent, not really a certain chiyuv, but a certain connection in that case to the actual mitzvah of Pru Avu, or is it that she has more generally the schar that she's helping her husband do a mitzvah which he wouldn't be able to do without her. So, in fact, there's a sicha in Chelik Yodalad where most of the sicha the Rebbe is talking about the chiyuv of women as far as learning Torah, to what extent do women have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, where again you have the same idea. On the one hand, they don't have the mitzvah themselves. On the other hand, they help out, as the Gemara says in Brachas, that they send their husbands to learn in yeshiva, they send their children to learn in cheder, etc.
Can you go over what we said yesterday? What was the source that it's the man's mitzvah for pruer?
So we said ultimately it's because we said two things. Number one, because it says pruer uravu umeluas aretz v'chiv shuha, where the word v'chiv shuha is spelt without a vav, and therefore it can be read v'chavsha, and you singular conquer it, and ish davka l'kabish, it's the man who conquers. And number two, we said because even though by Adam and Noach it says pruavu in plural, but by Yaakov it says prey urve in the singular, and therefore that means that the mitzvah is only on him. But now Rabbi Yechon ben Breika disagrees with that point. What I was saying is the Rebbe discusses briefly in that sicha the idea. Now we're going to be talking about in the Gemara. Whether she has the right to demand a divorce if they haven't had children all these years. That will be negeya. The question of whether she actually has the mitzvah is going to be relevant to that. So the Gemara says, Itmar, Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Chad Amar Halacha Ker Rabbi Yechon ben Breika, V'Chad Amar Ein Halacha Ker Rabbi Yechon ben Breika. Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi disagree whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yechon ben Breika or not. Now, which one said which? The Gemara says, Tistayim, we can conclude that Rabbi Yechon and Amar Ein Halacha, that Rabbi Yechon would be the one who says the halacha is not like Rabbi Yechon ben Breika. The Yosef, Rabbi Bo, V'Ka'amah Meshmeid, Rabbi Yechon and Halacha, because we find that Rabbi Bohu was sitting and saying in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan ben Breika, va'ad grinu Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi va'apayu, and Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, who were sitting there, turned their faces away as an expression of disagreement. They didn't want to contradict him outright and say Rabbi Yechanan didn't say that, for reasons that the Gemara is going to say in a minute, but they turned their faces around in disapproval, showing, in other words, that they knew, and they were Talmidim of Rabbi Yechanan, they knew that, in fact, Rabbi Bohu was misattributing it, and Rabbi Yechanan did not say that. So that would show us that Rabbi Yechanan, in fact, said the halacha is not like, that Rabbi Yechanan did not say the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan and Breika. The Ikadamri, another version is Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba. Another version is Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba said the halacha, that Rabbi Yechanan had said the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan and Breika. And according to that version also, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi turned their faces away in disapproval. However, the Gemara says, Amar Rapapa, so Rapapa says we have to consider which version is more likely to be correct. According to the first version, that Rabbi Bohu is the one who reported this in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, then we understand why Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi didn't want to challenge him about it outright. Because of the honor of the household of the emperor, where Rabbi Bohu had very good relations with the government. Rashi refers to Gemaris, where we find that even when he would come and visit, then the maidservants over there would come and sing a song in his honor. So therefore, because he would go there every so often to talk to them, to treat the Jewish people well, etc. So because of that, So therefore, they may have felt constrained. They can't actually tell him outright, you're misquoting Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore they just turned away their faces in disapproval. Ella, but Rabbi continues, if Rabbi Chiya Abba is the one who first reported this in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, let them tell him outright that Rabbi Yochanan did not say that. So the fact that they didn't doesn't necessarily prove that so fine. So at best, what you have is you have Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba saying one way and Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi saying the other way. You can't necessarily prove from that that what Rabbi Yochanan actually said or not. Okay, the Gemara says, fine, we can't prove it that way. My Havyalah, what's the bottom line? Can we prove, after all, which one Rabbi Yochanan said, whether he said the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Breita or not? So Toshma, the Omer of Acha b'Chanina, Omer of Abahu, Omer of Asi. And here we do have Rabbi Asi involved. Uvda hava kamed Rabbi Yochanan b'knishta de Kesari. There happened a case in front of Rabbi Yochanan in the shul of Kesari, of Caesarea in Eretz Yisrael, where there was a case of a couple who had where the couple had been married and now she wanted and she wanted a divorce because they didn't have any children. And Rabbi Yochanan said that the husband is required to divorce her and he has to pay her ksuba. Now, if you're going to tell me that a woman does not have a chiyuv, so if you say she has a chiyuv, a pruvu, then fine, she has the right to not only to demand the divorce, but to get her ksuba, because she can say, look, it's your fault, or it may possibly be your fault, as we discussed yesterday, that I'm not having children. I have a mitzvah. I demand the right to be able to do my mitzvah. Therefore, you need to divorce me, and so I can remarry somebody else. And since you can't prove that it's not, that the infertility is my fault, I counterclaim that it's actually yours, as we discussed in the Gemara yesterday. I claim you're not Yoda Kachetz or whatever. Then therefore pay me my ksuba. So that all assumes that the woman has a chiyuv pruvu. But the isakdadach loy mafkadah, if you say she has no chiyuv ksuba maya vidda, then what is she doing collecting her ksuba? After all, on what basis is there for her to collect her ksuba? Fine, she wants out. Whether we should force the husband to divorce her, fine, maybe we should, just because he has a mitzvah pruvu, but that wouldn't necessarily entitle her to her ksuba, because on the face of it, her claim is not strong enough And the answer is, Dilma Baba Machmas Taina. As a matter of fact, yes, you could have where she is making a claim that even though I don't have a mitzvah pruvu, I still have other reasons why I want children. So here you have where in that sikha that I was mentioning before, where the Rebbe explains, even if we follow the Ram and we say that even though she doesn't have the mitzvah pruvu, she's still being an essential partner in it. She shares in the mitzvah to a certain extent, but we wouldn't necessarily say that that's a strong enough basis for her to be able to force the husband to divorce her so that she can be a partner in fulfilling that mitzvah with somebody else. Because after all, unlike with the husband, it really depends on her volition. If she wants to be a partner in that mitzvah, then she can. But as we're saying, if the halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Breita, then it's not actually incumbent on her. So that wouldn't be a strong enough reason for her to demand the divorce and to demand her ksuba, except unless we say, as the Gemara is going to say now, that she has a different claim. Namely, what's the other claim? Ki hayida soy lekamed Rab Ami. We have the example of a woman who came to Rab Ami. Omrulay havli ksuba. She says, I want to get divorced and I want my ksuba. Omrulah, so Rab Ami tells her, zil, go. You don't have a basis to demand the divorce in your ksuba. Loy mifkades, you don't have the mitzvah pruvu. Omrulay, so the woman answers him, misevo dila. In her old age, meaning in my old age, my tevi Allah, the hach itza, what is going to be with that woman? In other words, it's true. I don't have a mitzvah pruvu, but practically speaking, I want to be able to have that when I'm old. I want to have children who will help take care of me. Omar, Rav Ami says, that's different. Ki ha vade kafina. In a case like that, yes, we certainly do force him to give her a get and pay her ksuba, because that's a valid claim. In other words, now the alternative could be, for example, that she had children from a previous marriage, And now she's been with this husband for many years, 10 years even, and they haven't had children. So now she has, so that wouldn't give her a valid claim for a divorce, because then we could say, look, you have already your older children. So therefore you have who to support you in your old age. But here we're talking about where she doesn't have that. So then that would be a valid basis. Even if we say she's not chayiv in pruvu, that would be a valid basis for her to demand a get and also to demand huksuba, because she does have a valid claim over there that would be reason enough for us to force her husband to divorce her so that she has the opportunity to have children, not to fulfill the mitzvah, because we're saying she doesn't need to, but practically speaking, so she has children to support her in her old age. Tosfos discusses over here, and the Rambam also holds that when we say that we'd force him to divorce her in that case, now you have like this. There's the ksuba itself, and then you have what's called Tosfos ksuba. Typically you have the minimum amounts for the ksuba, 100 for a non-basula, 200 for a basula, zuz. And then in addition, you have the husband can add whatever he wants. We have, for example, in our standard ksubas, nowadays you have a loshen like that you have, for example, for a woman who's never been married, masayim zuzi, 200 zuz, which are suitable for your daraisa. And then so on and so forth. And then we say Tzvi Chosin Danan, that the Chosin agreed and he added on his own another, whatever it is, it says in the Ksuba, Masayim Kesef, Masayim Zkukim Kesef Tzaruf. So now, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanano, and the Rambam also holds this way, that in this case, when she's demanding a get, and she can get it, because after all, she does have a valid claim, the Iker Ksuba she'll get. But the Tosfos Ksuba, she's not necessarily entitled to, because the reason the husband gave her a Tosfos Ksuba in the first place is he expected to be married to her for a good long time. He didn't expect that she's going to sue him for divorce and make him divorce her. Tosfos also then discusses further, and different Rishonim discuss, are we talking about specifically that this happens only after the 10 years have passed that we said in the Mishnah? Is it possible that maybe she could bring forth such a claim even within the 10 years? Because again, we do have the issue that we discussed yesterday, that after all, you have a Gemara at the end of Nedarim that says it's not so simple for a woman to demand a divorce and just get it, because there's always the concern, Shema Einan, Nosna Ba'acher, she may actually be looking at somebody else and wanting to marry him, and therefore she's making excuses to get out of her marriage. So these are various dinim, these are various complicated issues that Beis Din has to deal with the different factors. Anyway, the point is, just because Rabbi Yochanan said that in the case of that the woman is entitled to a divorce doesn't necessarily show that that's because the halacha is like Rabbi Yechon ben Broika, that she's chayiv and pruvu. It might be because of practicalities, because she's saying, after all, I need children to support me in my own age. But let's say, for example, that she only had a boy from a previous marriage. Now, that's not enough to fulfill pruvu, but it is enough that at least she has a child to support her in her old age. So then that might not be a valid basis for her to demand a get from her current husband, even if they've been together 10 years and no children, because now at least she does have somebody to take care of her in the future. So similarly, the Gemara says, in a similar way, there was a woman who came to Rav Nachman to demand a get. So he tells her again, like Rav Ami did, you're not required to do pruvu, so what are you worried about? So she answers him, doesn't that woman, meaning I, need a walking stick for her hand and a shovel for her grave? In other words, expressing the same idea that I need children, that when I'm old, they'll be able to take care of me, support me, like the way a walking stick supports an old person, and eventually to bury me. Omar, so again, Rav Nachman said, Ki ho vade kafinan. Yes, in that kind of case, we do force the husband to divorce her, because that is a valid claim, even if she's not chayiv in pruvu. And even if we say that, like the Rebbe says in that sicha, that to the extent that she shares in the mitzvah of pruvu, as the Ran says, it's still something that depends on her volition. Well, in this case, you have a different factor, not really directly related to the mitzvah of pruvu, a practical factor of what she needs for her old age, and therefore that's reason enough for us to require her husband to give her a get. Okay, now further on this topic of whether women are chayiv in pruvu, so the Gemara says like this: Yehuda v'Chizkiyah ta'oinam ha'koyu. By way of background, Yehuda and Chizkiyah, the two sons of Rabchiyah, were actually twins. but they were born several months apart because echad nigmer tzirasa v'saif tisha ve'echad nigmer tzirasa v'tchilas shiva. One was finished being formed in the womb after a normal 9-month pregnancy. The other one was born at the other one was finished after a 7-month pregnancy. The Gemara we learned earlier in the Masechta about the concept that there can be a 7-month pregnancy. We said actually even it really means 6 months and a fraction, and already a baby can be born healthy and viable after that. Moshe Rabbeinu was born after such a pregnancy. The Avos, so at least Yitzchak, there's a possibility the same thing. There's several figures in Jewish history of whom we have such a thing. And so in general, it's accepted in halacha that there can be such a thing. A baby can be born after 6 months and change and be healthy and viable. So now what happened was these two twins, one of them was just that, and the other one developed on the normal 9-month track. So therefore, even though they were twins, they were born a couple months apart. So now the Gemara says, Yehudis dvesu derochia have a lot sara later. So now their mother, Yehudis, who is the wife of Rabchia, was having tremendous trouble with her labor, in fact, that's part of it. The Gemara is going to say in a second that she also had twin girls. Maybe it was the same thing with them, maybe not. But the point is she had a lot more labors and a lot more trouble with her pregnancies than the average woman does. So she wanted out of it. Shanoimana. So what she did was she disguised herself in different clothing. And she came to her own husband, Rav Chiya, to ask a shayla. Since she was disguised, he didn't recognize her. Omra, so she asked him, Itza Mastama, also she changed her voice. Omra, she asked him, Itza Mafkada Piri Varivya, do women have a Chiya of approval? And he tells her, based on what we just said, no. The halacha is not like Rav Yechin Ben Breka, the halacha is like the Chachamim. So now she figured, in that case then I have a basis for making myself infertile. So she went and drank a potion to make her infertile. Had she been told that the halacha is that women are chayiv pruvu, she wouldn't have done that. Now, to be sure, she already has children by that time, but there's always the possibility that we learned before that the children might pass away, and then we said the halacha is that the father hasn't fulfilled pruvu. So if there was, I think the Aruch HaNer discusses this, that if Rav Chiya had told her that women are chayiv and pruvu, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yechon Ben Breka, she wouldn't have done this despite the pain and the discomfort she had had in her pregnancies, because she would have had to be concerned about this possibility of her children dying and then her being left without the mitzvah. But given that she was told she anyway doesn't have the mitzvah, then she felt more free to do this. There is, by the way, a good deal of discussion in halacha about the ins and outs of this, about to what extent do we say that because women aren't chayiv and pruvu, that therefore they're allowed to do such things, take potions like that, take birth control pills or whatever, in order to prevent themselves from becoming pregnant, or even there's discussion about how that relates to the dinim of abortion. But before a certain point, or even maybe after a certain point, the baby is, after all, not fully alive yet. He's in the womb. So therefore, the issue of abortion at that point, at least for Jews, is not necessarily so much the matter of killing a person, but rather the matter of ashkosa zera. Actually, it's a different discussion whether women are chayiv and ashkosa zera. But anyway, certainly as far as birth control pills or whatever, part of the discussion turns on our Gemara over here, where we're saying that Rav Chiya's wife Yehudis did just that. So the Gemara continues the story. L'soif, Glai Milsa. Eventually, the matter was discovered. Rav Chiya found out what happened, that this woman who came to him with the Shaila was none other than his own wife, Yehudis. Amalah, so Rav Chiya said, it's a pity. Eichu yodosli chada kresa achrita. I wish that you would at least had for me one more womb full of children. Do'amamau, now by this point, she had already had two sets of twins. Do'amamau, Yehuda v'chizkiya achi, Yehuda and Chizkiya, that we just said before, were two brothers and they were twins. Pazi v'tavi achvasa. And Pazi and Tavi were the two sisters, the daughters of Rav Chiya and Yehudis, and they were also twins. So Rav Chiya is saying, it's such a pity, you could have at least had one more set of twins for us, and now that possibility is foreclosed. Anyway, the point is that we see from that story that she's not chayiv and pruvu. So the question is, v'loy mifkadi. So you're telling me women are not chayiv and pruvu. V'amar av acha bar av ktina amar av Yitzchak. Maise be'isha achas shechetzi shifcha v'chetzi v'askarin. It happened with a certain woman that she was half slave woman and half free. As we've discussed earlier in Masechta, the most straightforward way would be that she had two owners and one of them freed her. Anyway, now, When it comes to a man, then actually the Gemara discusses in a few places that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued about what you do with such a person. Beis Shammai said you have to free him fully because otherwise he can't do pruvu, because he can't marry a slave woman because he's half free, and he can't marry a free Jewish woman because he's half slave. And Beis Hillel ended up conceding to that and saying we have to arrange to get the guy freed as soon as possible. But on the face of it, women that doesn't apply to, because you know, they're not chayiv and pruvu. But in this particular case, the kofos rabba basa baschodin. In this case, they forced her master to make her completely free. So if you say women aren't chayiv and pruvu, why would they do that? The answer is amar Nachman Yitzchok minag hefker nagaba. This was a special case. People were treating her with hefker precisely because she couldn't get married. Then therefore she was going and being promiscuous, and people are going and having relations with her outside of marriage, where any Jew, any Jewish man who's doing that is being over on an issue of loisi akdesha, and therefore they forced her master to free her in order that this way she can get properly married, and this way that'll dispose of that problem. So not because she's chayiv and pruvu, but because of the situation that was going on with her. And that, in fact, is the halacha. So women are not chayiv and pruvu. And if you have a chetzi shivcha, a chetzi baschurin, normally you're not required to free her completely, unlike with an eved. But if you have a case like this, where she's being promiscuous, where she's being mafka herself, because she figures, I can't get married, I may as well live it up. Then in that case, we force the husband, the master, to free her, and that way she can get properly married, and that way she'll get her desires satisfied in marriage rather than being machshel other men. Hadron alach volume.
Yeah. This juncture, we need to know the exact meaning of a woman not obligated to prove her rule.
Because one thing we'll say is that.
Let me finish my question.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm asking a question here.
Yeah.
Does that mean that a woman can refuse having children from her husband? Or does that mean that a woman who is pregnant, as you mentioned previously, can decide on her own to terminate her pregnancy because she feels she has the right to do so?
Okay, so the answer is like this. As far as refusing to have children once she's already married, that's something in halacha called meredes. We'll talk about it in more detail in Masechta Ksuvos. But broadly speaking, she doesn't have that right without there being certain consequences. We'll talk about it in Masechta Ksuvos, Bez Hashem, but she has the ability to not get married in the first place. The fact that she's not required to do pruvu means she doesn't have to get married in the first place. But once she gets married, then already there's a certain, she's taken on herself a certain shibud to her husband, and one of them is that they're going to have relations. If we're talking about that it's dangerous to her health, then that's when you ask a shayla to a rav, very possibly based on what we're saying over here, that since she's not chayiv and pruvu, he may give a tatum for it. But again, you do have the consideration that the husband, after all, has the mitzvah of pruvu, and since nowadays he can't marry a second wife, then you have to factor that into consideration as well. She can't prevent him from doing his mitzvah, after all. At most, what we could say is maybe she has the right to demand a divorce and let him marry somebody else if she really doesn't want to have children. But again, these are things that Rabbanim would have to discuss. As far as your second point, as far as an abortion, so I started mentioning that, but then I caught myself because really, actually, there it's not so much a question of period verivia. There it's more a matter of hashchos asezera, the fact that you're wasting seed, that you're wasting a potential life. So that's a different question, whether women are chayiv in that mitzvah or not. So that's a whole different discussion. And the question of whether she can do that is going to partly turn on that. But again, there is also the consideration that the unborn children that she's carrying, they're not only hers after all, they're her husband's as well, and he has to have a say in that as well. So again, I mean, these are complicated dinim. We're not going to dispose of them. We're not going to deal with them in the framework of our shir. But yes, these are big discussions that many great rabbanim have discussed the ins and outs of. When we say that, when we would say that it's allowed and not allowed, and what rights does she have versus balancing her rights with those of her husband?
So basically, you're saying it's on a case by case basis.
I don't know if that's on a case by case. To a certain extent, it is on a case by case basis because it depends, for example, what her motivations are for not wanting to have children or wanting an abortion. Yeah. So to a certain extent, it will depend on her motivations. But there's also, there'll be other factors to consider as well. Again, another factor to consider, if nothing else, is has the husband fulfilled pruvu or not? But yeah, there is quite a bit. There are quite a lot of moving parts over here.
Now, coming back to your previous point, when you quoted two psukim, one peruvu and the other one pray and revei. Peruvu applies to the whole Jewish people. Pray and revei
So that's the thing. So what we said is peruvu was said to Adam and to Noach, and Tosfos explained that according to the Chachamim, where again the halacha is like them, what we're saying is those psukim are said more in the form of a bracha than of a mitzvah. Whereas now, when by Yaakov, instead, the pasuk changes the phrasing and uses prey revei, then that's meant to imply that when we're not talking about that it's needed for a bracha, because, in other words, the idea is, at that point, humanity is already established, and the Jewish people have already been established, Yaakov himself has many children, then we're saying that now we can stress the point that pruvu applies only to the men. When humanity is first starting out, when Hashem created the world, and after the Mabul, then we're saying that it's good, since it's for a bracha, so therefore the language doesn't have to be as precise. Okay, let's go on. We have ground to cover over here. Then we can discuss this after the shiur further if we want. Okay. The subject of the next perek, we're going to take up something that we discussed in brief in the previous perek, namely the halachas of which members of a Kohen's household or a Kohen's ex-household are allowed to eat truma. This is actually based on psukim from this week's parasha. The Torah tells us, now we know a Kohen himself is allowed to eat truma. Also, the pasuk says that the kinyan kaspoi, that anyone who the Kohen acquires with his money is allowed to eat truma, for which reason we said in the previous perek that the Kohen's wife, given that he's Makadosh her with money, is able to eat truma. Daraisa, we said even when she's an arusa, drabanan only once she's a nesua. Also, slaves that he buys are allowed to eat truma. Now, the posit goes on to say that if a bas Kohen is married to a zur, then she, like this, up until now, she had the right to eat from truma from her father's household, truma de ben nosha, it's called. Now, when she's married to a zur, then that's also to her. However, if then that zur dies or divorces her, and she's childless, and she returns to her father's house, then she can resume eating truma. So now, one more thing to realize then is that the flip side is then that if a Bas Yisrael marries a Kohen, she's now allowed to eat truma, but only provided that marriage is valid up yalacha. If she wasn't allowed to marry him, then she herself can't eat. And then we're going to talk about also what the din is of her avodi. So that those kinds of topics are going to be the subject of our perek, and the beginning of the next perek is also the first half of the next perek is also going to talk about the dinim of who's allowed and not allowed to eat truma. So this is really all a digression from the topics of Masechta Yevamos. But since we talked about previously which women a Kohen is allowed and not allowed to marry, and that itself was a digression because we had mentioned Chalutza, and then therefore the Mishnah takes the opportunity over here to expand on these dinim. So the Mishnah starts off, Almana l'Kohen Gadol, if a Kohen Gadol marries an Almana, Grush of a Chalutza l'Kohen Hedit, or a regular Kohen marries a Grush of a Chalutza. So either way, in other words, these are marriages that are also Al Pi Torah. The Kiddushin are Tofes, but the marriages are also Al Pi Torah. So then it depends. Now we know that when a woman brings property into a marriage, there's two kinds of property. We call them Nichsim Melug and Nichsit Tzoyin Barzel. Nichsim Melug, the word Melug itself literally means plucking. So what it means is where the actual object belongs to her, but the husband is entitled to the payrus of it. So let's say, for example, it was a field, the actual land itself belongs to her, but the husband is entitled to the produce of the field as long as they're married. If it's an eved, for example, as we're talking about over here, then it means she owns the actual eved, but the husband has the right to use the services of the eved for work. And so on and so forth. Those kinds of things are called nichsim melug. So Rishonim talk about the idea that melug means plucking or singeing. In other words, the metaphor is like you have, as if like you take a chicken and you pluck off the feathers, or as if like you take the head of an animal and singe off the hair, where the head and the head still continues to exist afterwards, and the chicken still continues to exist afterwards, but you've just plucked off the extra, like the husband is plucking off over here the papers. That's nichsim melug. Then you have nichsei tzoyin barzel. which is nechosim, which now belong completely to the husband. The only difference is that the only thing is that he has an achrayus on them, that if something happens to them during the marriage, they get lost or stolen or depreciated or whatever, then he has to make that up to her. Typically, so both of these things would be so both of these things are brought into the marriage. Rashi describes that the nichset son barzo usually would be written into the ksuba. When we have in our standard ksubas nowadays, the Dain Nadunya Dan Olaslani Bay Baila, when we say that this is the Nadin, this is the dowry that she brought in from her father's house, and we start listing. So nowadays we just do a standard listing, like Kesev, Klezov, the Tachshitin, gold, silver, caleb, jewelry, etc. But in earlier times, they would actually customize it and write specifically over there what nechosim, what property she's bringing into the marriage. Why don't we do that now? I guess because nowadays, you know, you're not going to start listing. I mean, nowadays you have a lot more people have a lot more things than they did. You know, you're going to start listing all of them.
Break up the marriage.
And well, that too. Yeah, maybe. Anyway, whatever the case. So such things are called nichsei tzon barzel. Those ones that are written into the ksuba is now the husband has ownership of them, but he has an achrayus on them to repay his wife when they get lost or depreciated or whatever. When he pays off the ksuba. Then you have nichsei belug that are not written in the ksuba, where again the husband gets the payas. Where there, the point is then that any depreciation or whatever is on her, the husband's not responsible for it. Rashi explains the lashon tzoin barzel, literally tzoin barzel means iron sheep, implies you guaranteed the principal, because after all, even if they die or whatever, he has to pay her, so therefore like she's guaranteed when he dies or divorces her, she's going to get back the full value of those things.
Worthless and he has
well, if he's bankrupt, fine. We're not talking about that. I mean, for that matter, if she dies first, then she doesn't collect the ksuba anyway. But yeah, but we're talking about that. Basically, she has a much greater certainty with these nichset tzoin barzel that she's actually going to get them back completely. In fact,
FDIC insured CDs.
I guess you could say that kind of, yeah. In fact, actually, what they used to have is there was a common arrangement. The reason why we call it tzoin barzel specifically, there was a common arrangement, which the Mishnah describes in Bava Metzia, involving sheep like that, where two people would make a deal. I own these sheep. I'm giving them to you to raise. You're responsible. You have a chrayus for anything that happens to them. And at the end, we'll split the profits, the wool, the babies, etc., the milk, etc. So therefore, but the investor, the one who owns the sheep, is guaranteed his return of his sheep back or their value. And therefore, it's like it's iron sheep. It's like the sheep where it's guaranteed not to depreciate. So therefore, that expression, tzoin barzel, came to be applied to other such arrangements as well. Anyway, the point is, the Mishnah says, so now, this woman married a kohen illegally because she's an amon al kohen gadol etc. So nisaloi avdei melug va'avdei tzoin barzel. Suppose she brought into the marriage some slaves avodim knanim, which are nichsei melug, and others which are nichsei tzoin barzel. So then it depends. Avdei melug lo yechlu b'truma. The ones who are in the melug status, the ones who are not listed in the ksuba, are not allowed to eat truma because they belong to her. She herself is not allowed to eat truma, being a halala. As soon as she married the kohen and had relations with him, she becomes a halala. Therefore, her slaves are not going to be able to eat truma as well. On the other hand, avdei tzoin barzel yechlu. On the other hand, the tzoin barzel ones, the ones where their value was listed in the ksuba, where therefore in effect those belong to the husband, then those are allowed to eat truma because the husband himself does not become a cholol by marrying such a woman. She became a cholola as soon as they got married and had relations. Yeah. He didn't become a cholol. Now Midrabanan will say that he can't serve in the Beis Hamikdash until he agrees to divorce her. But
who is she?
She's an almana. He's a kohen gadol. She's a grusha b'chalotzi. He's a kohen adi.
Yeah,
he's not a chalom. Okay, their children will be chalom. Okay, so the Mishnah continues. But Elohein avdei melug. What's the definition of avdei melug? Is as we said, meisu meisu la bi meisiru heisiru la. If they die, then it's on her. The husband doesn't have to repay her for it. If they depreciate, or if they just the opposite, if they increase in value, then the increase in value is hers. So those are avdei melug. So afa pishu chayvim is a noisan. So even though the husband is chayiv to feed them, and nevertheless, harelo lo yechlo b'truma, they're not allowed to eat truma because essentially they belong to the wife, and she at this point is a halala. continues on the other hand, on the other hand, the Elohim object, Tzon Barzel, on the other hand, slaves of Tzon Barzel, where the definition is in Mesu, Mesu Loi, Vimesiru, Esiru Loi, if they die or if they increase in value, then it's on him, meaning he's going to have to repay her the appropriate amount. Or he's going to have to, if they increase in value and then die, or then he's going to have to pay the increased value. So then they're considered to actually belong to him. And therefore, harelo yochel b'truma, so they can eat truma, because fine, he's not a cholo. He married a woman that he wasn't supposed to. He's chayiv malchus for it. Midrabanan, we won't let him serve as a kohen until he takes care of the situation. But at least on a daraisa level, he still has his kohuna, and therefore they can eat truma. Continues the Mishnah. Bas Yisrael shenisas l'koyin. Now, all of this, the first part of the Mishnah, was talking about, again, where she's a psula to marry a koyin. What about a regular Bas Yisrael shenisas l'koyin, who marries a koyin? V'ichnisa l'avodim. And she brings avodim into the marriage. Bein avdim malug, bein avdit, tzon barzel. Then, regardless whether they're malug or tzon barzel, harei l'yotla b'truma, they're allowed to eat truma. Because after all, even the nichsim malug, they're not his, they're hers. But fine, the fact is, she herself is considered kinyan kasboi. She herself now has the right to eat truma, having been acquired with the kohen's money. Therefore, her avodim, which belong to her, also are able to eat truma on the basis of her.
I left my daughter. My brother-in-law is staying. So okay. That's yichud. I have to go back.
Okay,
home,
so
right?
Fine. Okay, so fine. Okay, so fine. Okay. On the other hand, uvas koyin shenisses liyisrael. Vice versa, though, her bas koyin marries Yisrael v'ichnisa le'avodim, and she brings an avodim into the marriage. Bein avdim malug, bein avdit son barzel. Either one, harei lo lo yechlo b'truma, then they're not allowed to eat truma. She herself is now possible from eating truma, having married Yisrael. Now, she didn't do anything wrong. It's not like we're talking about in the first part of the Mishnah where she was an almona or a grusha or what have you. The fact is, though, the Torah says that when a bas koyin marries a zur, then she follows her husband, and therefore she's disqualified from eating truma. So therefore, now the avodim, the tzon barzel belong to her husband, so they certainly can't eat truma any more so than the avodim of a regular Yisrael could. And the avodim, which are malug, which are hers, can't eat truma either, because she herself is disqualified now from eating truma. So the Gemara starts off, the avdim malug lo yoichlo b'truma. So you're telling me that the avdim malug, In the case over here, in the first case of the Mishnah, when she's possible to marry the Kohen, why shouldn't they be able to eat truma? Amai, why not? Shouldn't it be the equivalent of that the Kohen made a Kinyan, and in turn, that Kinyan itself made a Kinyan? In other words, in effect, the Kohen acquired the woman in marriage. She herself acquired Avadim, and as we're going to talk about, not only a Kohen's own acquisitions are allowed to eat truma, but even the acquisitions of his acquisitions are. So, Ditanya, minayim a Kohen shenosa isha v'kana avodim. How do we know that if a Kohen marries a wife buys avodim, sheyochel b'truma, how do we know b'chlal that they're allowed to eat truma is the pasuk says if a kohen acquires a person with money, then such a person is allowed to eat. So that includes both his wife, where he did kedushin with her, as well as avodim that he paid for. So they're allowed to eat truma. And the braisa continues. When we name the isha shekonsa avodim. Now, how do we know further that if his wife bought avodim? The avod of shekonu avodim, or if his own slaves brought avodim, which Rashi says, I mean, how is that possible? Mashakonu ever konu rabba, if the slave, whatever the slave himself acquires, belongs to his master. So Tosfos says, Rashi says, let's say, for example, they gave the Eved money, and they told him this is almanat, or they gave him slaves directly and whatever, and they told him that almanas, this is on condition that your master doesn't have any ownership of them. We talked about this briefly in the previous parak, where we mentioned that it says whether that Siva, the slave of Shaul and his family, had a avodim of his own. Anyway, the point is, the Braisa is saying, how do you know that in such a case, that the avodim themselves buy avodim, or where the wife buys avodim, so how do we know she yoichlo b'truma, that they are allowed to eat truma? Shenemar v'koyin ki yikne nefesh kinyan kasboi. Again, the posik says the same posik. If a koyin acquires a soul with kinyan kasboi, an acquisition that he bought with his money, who yoichlo boy, he can eat in it, implying kinyanish konya kinyan oichlo. So therefore, we see that even his kinyan, who bought another kinyan, is allowed to. So therefore, the question is, in our Mishnah, when the Kohen Gadol married an Almana, etc., fine, they weren't allowed to marry. But the fact is, she is his kinyan, the Kedushin Artofus. So why shouldn't her Avodim be able to eat Terumah? As far as this Avodim, Shekonu Avodim, by the way, Tosfos brings another scenario that, let's say, for example, the owner was Mathu, the Eved, and now he was able to buy Avodim, because now he's considered to a certain extent free, but nevertheless, he's still allowed to eat Terumah until he actually gets a Get Shekru. Anyway, the point is that, so why in our Mishnah are we saying that this wife, granted, he married her to Isser, but the fact is she's still Kenyan Paskoi. So fine, she can't eat. We can understand that. She's a Chalala. But why shouldn't her Avodim be able to eat? Even the Nichsim, meaning the Nichsim alog. The answer is because the rule is Kola Oichel Machil, Kol Shein Oichel Einem Machil. Because the rule is only someone who themselves can eat Terumah is allowed, through them, somebody else can eat Terumah. Somebody who cannot. So therefore, fine. So she breaks the chain, in other words. So fine, when you have Avodim who buy Avodim, fine. The first level Avodim are allowed to eat Terumah because they belong to the Kohen. Therefore, so are the second level ones, but not over here where, yeah, she breaks the chain, being that she's a grusha or what have you. So the Gemara says, Valoi, you're telling me not? I'll show you counterexamples to that rule. Vahare oru v'cholat meim. Consider the case of a Kohen who's an oral, where we're going to say later on in our perek, he's not allowed to eat Terumah. We're going to learn from Sukkim that an oral is not allowed to eat Terumah, but his slaves are allowed to eat Terumah. V'cholat meim, and same thing if the Kohen, the same thing if the Kohen is Tomei, he's not allowed to eat Terumah, but his Avodim are allowed to. They can't eat Terumah, and they're still able to give their slaves or their wives Terumah. And the answer is Hosam Humayu Koivlahu. There it's the equivalent of as if they have their mouth hurts them and they can't eat. In other words, it's not that they're incapable of eating Terumah at all. Right now, under the current conditions, there's something preventing them from eating, the Terumah or the Arevus. Eventually that could be fixed up. As opposed to this woman who's a grusha, she became a chalala now when she married and had relations with her husband, the Kohen, and now she's never going to become mutter again. So that's a different thing. Even, by the way, when we're talking about an oral, now one possibility is we're talking about an oral that we talked about at the end of the previous parak, that his brother has died from mila, and therefore la halacha, you can't have a bris mila. But first of all, when he becomes older and stronger, conceivably he could. So fine, right now he's younger, he can't, but maybe when he's older, he'll be able to. And besides that also, Achronim talk about, listen, you know, after all, if we were to find a cure for him, he would be able to become a bris mila. Nowadays, with modern medicine, for example, even let's say you have a person has this condition that we talked about, hemophilia, they can give him, now that they know what causes it, they can give him an injection or whatever it is of the factors that are needed to clot blood, and then he'd be able to successfully undergo a bris milah. So therefore, it's not like he's permanently barred from bris milah, as opposed to over here she's permanently barred from trauma. Okay, the Gemara says, what about Vare Mamzer Shein Oichel Amachil? What about, on the other hand, here's an example. Suppose that a Bas Yisrael marries a Kohen. Now she's allowed to eat trauma. She has a daughter. So fine, so far so good, she's still able to eat Terumah. Now, that daughter now marries a mamzer, and they have a son. Now, suppose that later on that daughter dies, and all that's left is the son, the grandson, that is. So the grandson is a mamzer. He himself is not going to be able to eat Terumah. But his grandmother is still, even after her husband dies, is still going to be able to eat Terumah. I forgot to mention when I was giving the overview of the dinim over here, another din is that we said, if a Bas Kohen has children from the Yisrael, then she's not allowed to eat Terumah. The flip side of it is also true. If the Bas Yisrael was married to a Kohen and still has living descendants from him, even though her husband is dead, nevertheless, she's still able to continue eating Terumah because of her descendants. That's going to be another theme that's going to be throughout our parent. So in this case, she has a grandson who's a descendant of the Kohen, her husband. Therefore, even though he's a mamzer and he himself is not able to eat Terumah, nevertheless, because he's alive, she, the grandmother, is able to eat Terumah. So there you have an example where Eina Uchel, the grandson himself, can't eat Terumah, but Machil, because of him, his grandmother is allowed to eat Terumah. So you see that violates the rule we just said. The answer is Amar Ravina, Kinyan Oichel Ka'amar. What we're talking about, we're focusing specifically, the rule that we said is specifically regarding the Kinyan making it possible for a person to eat. Kinyan Oichel Macho, only someone who is acquired by somebody who themselves is able to eat Terumah is able to, then that Kinyan in turn can make others eat. So a Kohen who's able to eat Truma, or even fine, we said temporarily, let's say he's barred because he's an Arul or whatever. Nevertheless, if he buys Avadim and those other Avadim buy Avadim, or if he marries and then his wife buy then to a woman who's allowed to, Api Alocha, and she buys Avadim, then fine, those can eat Truma. When it comes to Kinyan, if he himself can't eat or she herself can't eat, then neither can their Avadim. In the case of the grandson, the mamzer we're talking about, there's no kinyan involved over here. The fact that she's able to eat truma is based on a different criteria. The fact that she has descendants from her husband, the kohen. There's no kinyan involved over there. So therefore, yes, it's true, she's able to continue eating truma because of her grandson, but that has nothing to do with the rule we're talking about over here, because our rule is talking about, eating truma based on kinyan rather than based on descent. So therefore, we can still hold by our rule. We're saying since she herself is a halala, therefore the avadim that belong to her are not able to eat truma. She herself is not allowed to eat truma. Therefore, neither can her avadim. That's one answer. Rava gives a different answer. So the answer that we said so far, the sum of the Gemara's answer was that daraisa, these avadim, these nichsim lug, are not going to be able to eat truma. Rava is going to tell us differently. For Rava Amma, midaraisa mechal achli, actually midaraisa, even the nichsim lug avadim would be allowed to eat truma. V'rabbanon hu degazru, who the chachamim made a gzera that they shouldn't, in the case of our Mishnah, where the woman becomes a halala as a result of her marriage. Kadesha toimar, in order that, we want her to say to himself, what's going on with you? I'm not able to eat truma. Neither can my servants. So therefore, zoyna he etzla. In effect, I'm being treated like a zoyna. I'm not really being considered. I'm not really being treated like a full wife of my husband. So she's going to be uncomfortable in her marriage and want out. And the husband will divorce her, which he should, because after all, she's also to a kohen. He's required up yalacha to divorce her. So like this. As it is, Beis Din is going to force him to divorce her, but she may try to put roadblocks in the way. So therefore, Rava says, we want to make her as uncomfortable in the marriage as possible by demonstrating, think of it, every time her husband and his avodim are eating truma, she's barred from that. Eventually, she's going to say to herself, you know what do I need? And what do I need such a sham marriage for? I want out. And that'll help, that it'll actually happen, that she'll be out of it.
Food talks.
Yeah, food talks, yeah. That's the second answer. Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi gives a third answer why who nichsim malog avodim can't eat. Gzeira shematache la'achamisa. Because we make a gzeira, he agrees, like with Rava, that it's dirabanan. But we make a gzeira, she might continue giving her nichsim malog avodim truma after her husband, the kohen, dies. So nichsit so in barzel, then there's no problem because those anyway belong to her husband. So therefore, so once the husband dies, then they know they can't, then everybody knows they can't eat truma anymore because the nichsimalug, if we say that daraisa, she was able to give them truma as long as her husband was alive. Now, when he dies, she may continue giving them truma, figuring, listen, after all, they're mine. So the question is, what's the logic? Elamiata Bas Yisrael shenissas l'koyin l'tachil. By that logic, if a regular Bas Yisrael marries a koyin, she shouldn't be able to give her avodim truma while the marriage is still intact. Gzeder shematachil l'achamisa. Same reason, because she might continue giving them after her husband dies. So Ela Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, rather, let's fix up what we said. Ba'almona kehenis. What we're talking about over here is that specifically the reason why the Chachamim made a gzera is because you could have the case where the Almana herself was a Bas Kohen. So now let's consider she went through many stages in her life in terms of eating truma. So the Asya Lo Iruya, she may mistakenly decide for herself as follows. Listen, Me Ikra Achli B'Truma D'Bein Nasha. Originally, I was allowed to eat truma from my father's house, which is a Bas Kohen. In Seve Lo Lahai Achli B'Truma D'Gavroi. When I got married to the Kohen, then they, my Avodim, were able to eat Truma of my husband. So fine, I wasn't able to because I became a Halala, but my Avodim were able to, the Hashta, Hadru the Lamilsa, Kamaisa. So now she's going to think, well, I go back to square one. now that my husband's dead, then fine. I still can't eat truma anymore. I still can't eat truma because I'm a halala. But my avadim, the same way as they were able to, the same way as they would have been able to in the first stage of my life when I was a bastarian, and the same way as and the same way as they were able to while I was married to my husband, even though I'm a halala, now they should be able to also. Because it was sooner, because she's an almana and married a Kohen Gadol. That's what we're talking about, an almana the Kohen Gadol. Grusha v'chalutz v'kohen hedi. That's the first line of our Mishnah. Yeah. The law yada, now she doesn't take into consideration she doesn't take into consideration the fact that before she wasn't a halala and now she is, and therefore that affects not only her ability to eat truma but also of her avadim. She's not going to take that into consideration. She's going to say, myself, I understand that there's a difference in my status, but the avadim, she's going to think that there's no difference.
They won't learn.
Is that right? That we're talking about. Yeah, we're talking about she may decide it on her own. She may draw an analogy, which turns out to be incorrect. So therefore, sort of, Ashi is saying, you're right. If we didn't have this din of a bas koyin being able to eat truma, then you're right. We wouldn't have a reason to make a gzera. But once we have that, and you have these various possible stages, so then there's the possibility that she might continue to give the avodim after her husband dies, where even on a daraisa level she can, and therefore dirabanan, even while they're married, we say she also can't. So the Gemara says Tenach Amona Kehenis. Well, okay, then that explains where she's an Amona who was a Bas Koyin. Amona Bas Yisrael Ma'ikulameh. So what are you going to say? According to Rav Ashi's logic, then there's no reason to make this Zera by a Bas Yisrael, because she's going to know, originally I was not allowed to eat Truma. When I married my husband, as an he's a Koyin Gadol, I'm an Amona, I also wasn't able to eat Truma. And now, but my avodim were. Now she's going to understand. Okay, but it's different now that my husband died. I was never able to eat truma. There's no reason to think after my husband died that my avodim should be able to. So why do we say that? And the answer is b'amunusaloi. When it comes to being widowed, the chachamim are not making that distinction. Once we say that it has to apply to an amona bas koyin, and then we apply it across the board to an amona bas yisrael as well. Okay. So the Gemara says now, Itmar. So now we have a discussion which is going to relate back to our mission. Hamachneses shum labayla. When the woman brings in shum for her husband, shum is another word for nichset sain barzel. We call them shum, meloshen shuma, which means an assessment, because we assess the value of these things and then they're written into the ksuba that she brought in property worth X amount. So therefore it's called shum, meaning something that was assessed. And we have to do that, obviously, because since the husband is taking responsibility for them and saying, I'm going to pay back if they depreciate or die or whatever, we need to know how much he's putting himself on the hook for. So hamachneses shum labayla. So suppose that she does that. She brings in nichset sein barzel. Now, eventually, they get divorced. He emetes kelei anina telus. So she says, I want to take back the original kelim that I brought in. So she brought in furniture or dishes or whatever. So she wants those actual objects back, which still exists. He says, no, I want to keep those things and I'll give you the value of them. I accept it on myself that I'll pay the value of them. Fine, I'll pay the value, but I want the actual objects themselves. Hadin immi. So who has the right? Who has the rights of the argument in halacha? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Hadin Ima. Rabbi Yehuda says that the din is on her side, so therefore she can take the actual kelim.
But she has children.
Well, it doesn't matter whether she has children or not. Rab Ami says that he has the right, and therefore he can say that I'm only paying the value. So let's analyze. Rab Yehuda Omer Hadin Ima, Mishum Shvach Beis Avia. Rab Yehuda says that she has the upper hand, even though it's true the husband has a certain valid claim that after all, I took the achrayus on it. Nevertheless, we still have to consider Shvach Beis Avia, the praise and the of her father's house, meaning it looks good that these kelim came from her father's house and they still exist, and she now has them. In fact, I think the Ritva adds also what it means is that now when she gets remarried and she's going to bring them into her second marriage, it looks good. It makes her more attractive to a new potential husband that she has kelim, that she has valuable items that she brought originally from her father's house and which are still in her possession, rather than so not just that she has a big bank account, but that she actually has objects that are going to be useful in the marriage.
Sein barzel is only on the field, not on furniture.
No, so we said, in other words, nichset sein barzel applies to anything. We're saying anything that she brings in to the marriage. We just said in the Mishnah, it can be avodim, it can just as well be furniture, yeah. So a shvach beis aviyah is a major consideration. We're going to learn about it extensively in Masechta Ksubos beis Hashem. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says that's a valid basis for her to say, I want the actual kelim. On the other hand, Rabbi Ami says, on the other hand, he has the valid argument, and we follow him, and we say he only has to pay the money, because let's look at our Mishnah. Kiven de Omar, after all, we said in our Mishnah, im mesu mesu loy vim esiru esiru loy, we said that the definition of tzoyin barizel is that if they die, then it's on him, and if they increase in value, it's on him, because we said he owns the goof of them. Well, and we said because he's chay bachrius and because he's responsible for them, therefore they're able to eat truma. So therefore, the point is that on the face of it, that means they're considered his. Well, if they're considered his, then he has every right to say, I want to keep the actual objects themselves and just pay you the value. So that's what Rabbi Ami is saying. On the other hand, Omer Rab Safra, but Rab Safra says that's not a valid proof. Mikatoni v'hein shaloi. After all, the Mishnah doesn't go so far as to say that these avodim are actually his. All it says is because he's chay bach miyusin, because he has to pay if they die or whatever, then that's what it means. So we could say they're not actually really his. They are to a certain extent that she retains a certain ownership on them, like Rabbi Yehuda is saying, to the extent that where she can say because of shvach beis aviyah that I want them back themselves, not just their value. So fine. In terms of truma, all we care about is that he has achrayus on them, and he has achrayus, so therefore they can eat truma, even though his wife herself is a halala. But not necessarily to go so far as to say that he can tell her when the marriage is over, I want those avodim, or I want those objects. Not necessarily. So the Gemara says, v'chol hecha d'chai b'achrayus and achli b'truma. Well, then the premise of what Reb Safra is saying is that even if something doesn't actually belong to you, but you're chayv in the achrayus of it, namely, again, if it dies or depreciates or whatever, you're responsible to pay it. So it sounds like from what Reb Safra is saying, that gives you enough of a degree of ownership that now if you're a Kohen, then that thing or that person can eat Truma. Is that in fact the case? V'hotnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Trumas, Yisrael shesachar parah mikohen. If a Yisrael rents a cow from a Kohen, now he's chayav b'achrayusa, because after all, he's a shomer sachar. He's not a shomer sachar, he's a socher, but the halacha is, Tosfos mentioned, there's a machlokas in a few places in Shas, what the degree of responsibility is of a shomer sachar, of a socher. The halacha is, he's like a shomer sachar, he's chayav in bnei v'aveda. If the animal gets lost or stolen, then he's chayav. Only if it was oynes or mesa machnas malacha, as he potter. So therefore, he has a certain degree of achrayus on it. And the Mishnah says, Harezi Yachilena Kashine Truma. So he's allowed to give it to eat Kashinim of Truma. Kashinim are a type of beans, which primarily, Tosfos points out, primarily they were eaten as animal food. If they were primarily eaten as human food, you wouldn't be allowed to give them to an animal anyway. You're not allowed to take, you're not allowed, not a matter of Baltashkas, but there's a specific. Well, so there's a specific rule as far as Truma that says you're not allowed to take food that could have been given to a person and give it to an animal. But you were talking about they're mainly used as animal food. But the fact is they're truma. So he's allowed to give it, beans of truma. So he's allowed to give it karshine truma. On the other hand, koyin shesocha poram Yisrael. But on the other hand, if a koyin rents a cow from Yisrael, so because the reason why in the ratio he's allowed to give it truma because the cow belongs to the Kohen. So the same way as the Kohen himself could have fed it truma, so can the Yisrael. The truth is it's not so simple actually, because there is on the other hand the din that the Yisrael is not necessarily allowed to take truma. It doesn't belong to him after all. He has to give it to the Kohenim. So how is he allowed to take it and feed it to the animal where he has the responsibility to feed the animal out of his own pocket? So
then can give them.
So one possibility is he could buy truma from a kohen, but then that wouldn't be worthwhile for him. He might as well give it regular beans. So there's a different gemara where Rashi discusses this and Tosfos discusses it over here and over there. That there's a few possibilities. One of them being that we're talking about that the truma may actually belong to the Yisrael in the sense. Let's say he inherited it from his grandfather who was a kohen. So then it actually belongs to him. So he has the right. And there's different other possibilities. Maybe just the fact that since he's able to give it to any coin he wants, then therefore he can also give it to the coin's animal. Tosfos discusses over here in general, the Yisrael is allowed to have hanah from truma, but not a hanah that destroys it. For example, the Yisrael wouldn't be allowed to give the truma to his own animal. But here, because the animal belongs to a kohen, then fine. Anyway, but the Mishnah continues, Koyan Chasocha Parim Yisrael. On the other hand, if a Koyan rents a cow from Yisrael, Af Pishim Azenis Seha Olav, even though he's responsible for feeding it, Lo Yachidan Kashin Truma. Still, the Koyan is not allowed to feed it Kashinim of Truma because it doesn't belong to him. So therefore, now, on the face of it, again, the Koyan who rented it is Chayev Bachriyosa. We still don't say that that gives him enough ownership of it to give it Truma. So how can you tell me that in the case of our Mishnah, so Mela, if you say that he needs to have full ownership and without that he can't feed it Truma, well, then fine. In that case, then fine. Rab Ami is saying that he has full ownership and therefore he doesn't even have to return the nichsim tzon barzel. He can say, I'm giving you only the value of it, he says to his ex-wife, then fine. But if we say like Rabbi Yehuda that and Rabbi Safra, that having an ownership only to the extent of achrayus is enough to be able to feed him truma, then why shouldn't the kohen in that case be able to give the animal truma? So my answer is back to Tisbara. Well, what are you thinking to compare? He's not chayev for every possible circumstance. Nihi nami de machayev b'gneva v'aveda. Granted, he's chayev if the animal gets lost or stolen. But if there was an oynes, if for example it was taken away by armed robbers, b'kachasha, or if it depreciates in value, or b'nifchas dameha, b'kachasha if it became thinner, if it became skinnier. Or if it became sick, for example, or if it got reduced in value for some other reason, mimi chayev is the soichu chayev. He's not. He's only chayev for gneva v'aveda. So therefore, so unlike nichse tzon barzel, where the husband has to pay back the wife no matter what happens, even oynes, for example, the eved died or whatever, here the socher is not in fact chayev for every possible circumstance. So therefore, you can say that's not considered ownership enough for the kohen to be able to give the animal truma. So therefore,
if the animal gets thinner, it means he's not feeding the animal up.
Well, that may be fine, but not necessarily. We'd have to figure out why is it getting thinner. Fine, but the point is he's not necessarily chayev for that. So holodamia elo sefer. So rather, if you're going to compare it to the sefer of that same Mishnah, where it continues, Yisrael shasham parim mikoyin. Now, before we were talking about a case of soicha, where he's renting the animal. Now we have instead shasham, where we have an arrangement like the tzon barzel arrangement that we said before, where the koyan own an animal. We're going to figure out the current value of the animal. I'm going to start taking care of it. And Rashi even describes this could actually be a form of schirus as well. We could have that when we first arrange the schirus, we're saying, let's figure out the value of the animal. And based on that, I will pay you at the end the full value of the full value, even if it depreciates or whatever. I'm accepting on myself responsibility that I'm going to pay for that difference. So that's how Rashi explains. Tosfos actually argues and says that, no, then you'd have a problem with ribis. Because then you have an effect that he's paying a rental fee for the animal, and in addition, he's accepting on himself every possible thing that might happen to it. That's a case of ribis. So rather, Tosfos says we're talking about where he's borrowing it and not paying money. So he's borrowing, but he's accepting on himself and a shoyo has full responsibility. So then, the Mishnah says Yisrael shasham parim mikoyin, that if we're doing that, we're evaluating the value of the animal, and based on that, he's accepting full responsibility. Lo yachlan kashinim truma. He's not allowed to feed it kashinim of truma because now at this point it is considered. Now it's under his achrayus. So if nothing happens to it, it's returning to the kohen. But nevertheless, until he does, it's considered his. So therefore, he can't give it kashinim truma. Av kohen shasham parim Yisrael. But they are the other way around. If the animal belongs to Yisrael and the kohen is taking full responsibility like that, Yachilena Kashinim Truma, then he's allowed to give it Kashinim of Truma, because now, for the time being, it's considered to be fully his. Applying that to our Mishnah, then the same thing. It's true that he's required to give back the Avodim to the wife when they get divorced, exactly the same way as the person is responsible to give back the actual animal if it still exists. But he accepted full responsibility that if the animal depreciates in value, he's going to make up that difference. The same way as the Nichset Son Barzal of our Mishnah, that if the Avodim go down in price, the husband is going to make up the difference. Therefore, that's considered to be enough ownership that he can give them to him. So therefore, it's not comparable to the regular case of a renter. It's rather more comparable to this case of Shasham Parah. With this full achrayus, right? Okay, so the Gemara continues. Yosef Rabba and Rabbi Yosef Shilay Pirka de Rabbi Nachman. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef one time were sitting at the end of the drosha of Rabbi Nachman. The Yasvi v'Kamri. So at that point, they Rabba and Rabbi Yosef were sitting and discussing. Tanya Kabasei de Rabbi Yehuda v'Tanya Kabasei de Rabbi Ami. We actually have brises like both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Ami, both opinions. The one that says that that she's entitled to the avodim themselves or the other nechosin back. Be'ain, and that's Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Ami, you said that he can say, no, I'll keep them and I'll just pay the value. We have prices like both of them. Tanya Kabasei de Rabbi Ami. A brisa says, now we know the Torah tells us that if the master of an Eved Kanani knocks out his eye or his tooth or any one of 24 other Rosh Eivadim, that the slave goes free. So this din applies only to the husband, not to the wife, because, in other words, they're not considered hers. I, on the face of it, they are hers, because after all, the husband has to repay her, but because he has the ability to say that I want to keep them and I'll just pay you their value, then therefore that's considered completely his, and therefore only if he knocks out the eye or the tooth, only then is it that he, the master, is chayev to free them, but not if she did. That would be like Rabbi Ami. That full achrayus is enough. That would be like Rabbi Ami. It's not just a matter of full achrayus. It's a matter of that for Shane V'ayin, it's not enough to have full achrayus. For Shane V'ayin, you have to actually have ownership. So Rabbi Ami says he actually has ownership of them. He has to repay her for them, but he has the ability to say, I want to keep them and I'll just give you their value. So therefore, their goof belongs to him, and therefore, therefore Shane V'ayin would apply to him.
So let's say the husband punched out his tooth, he goes free. So what happens?
So that's it. So he has to repay her for that. Fine. But nevertheless, the Eved belonged to him. Yeah. Tanya Kavasei de Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, we learn a brisa like Rabbi Yehuda that says, Hamachneses Shum Labayla. When she brings in Shum, again, she brings in Nichse Tzon Barzel into the marriage. Im Rotza Baal Limko Lo Yipko. If the husband wants to sell those things, he's not allowed to sell them because they don't really belong to him. And not only that, what if he brings in assets into the marriage? Imrotza Baal Limker Lo Yimker, he also can't sell without her permission, because after all, he has a shibud for huksuba. Any property that he brought into the marriage is under a shibud for huksuba, so he can't just go and sell it willy-nilly. No, we don't even Metalfin. We say in the Ksuba, the standard Ksuba that we write nowadays is that he's accepting on himself Ben Bakaka Ben Metalfin. Yeah. And on the other hand, continues the Braisa, Machnu Shneim LaParnosa. What happens if both of them sell it for Parnosa, which means it actually describes, doesn't have to be for Parnosa, but practically speaking, why else would a person be selling his furniture or his whatever? Because they're short of food. Rashi says Machnu Shneim means either one or the other. So they sold for Parnasa. There are Rishonim who learn that it means even if both of them sold, then Zeho Yemaisim, Shnei Rishim Gamliel. So such a case was brought to Rishim Gamliel, V'omra Baal Moitzim Yad HaLakuchas, and he said the husband has the ability to take it away from the buyers because it wasn't a valid Mechira. Because after all, we don't know which one of them is going to die first. So are they going to end up being part of his property or part of hers? So therefore, he has the ability to undo the sale, says Rishim Gamliel. If they have other things, then practically speaking, they wouldn't be selling these things. That's what Rashi said. That's why we're saying the Farnasa. But the point is, in other words, that each of them has the ability to block the sale.
They have to both
mutually agree on it. Maybe they make a kinyan with the owner, when they make a kinyan with the guy or whatever, that it's going to be irrevocable. So the Gemara finishes off that point. Omar Rava Omar Rav Nachman. Halacha could Rabbi Yehuda. So the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. She's entitled to the nechosim back themselves. He can't say, I'm just going to give you the value of that. Omar Le Rava Le Rav Nachman. V'atanya Kavasei de Rav Ami. What do you mean? We just said you have a braisa that supports Rav Ami. The answer is Afagav the Tanya Kavasei de Rav Ami. It's true we have a braisa that supports him. But Mistabra time it did Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Shvach Beis Aviyah. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda's point of Shvach Beis Aviyah is a very compelling argument, and therefore we're going to pass in halacha like it.
This way she has a,
so this way she has shvach beisaviyah. This way she has actual assets, not just money, but actual tangible assets that she can bring into a new marriage, where therefore it looks good that her father left her these kinds of things, and she can bring them into a new marriage, and therefore that's a compelling reason for her to be able to say that it's not just good enough for me to get the money, I want the actual objects themselves.
So she has upper hand, so to say.
Yeah. So that's what we said. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Shkayach, everyone.
More like a...